actually written in the Princess Palace, aka my bedroom, which is really my boyfriend and I's bedroom, but I'd sprayed the entire place down with lavender, so it was just this really soft feeling in there. And he has allergies, which means he was kept out of the room for a few hours. So it's only natural that once I was done writing and researching, that I invited him to join the show today. I guess that could also look like he's doing me two favors then, letting me take over our room and then coming around to be my co-host. Relationships, am I right? They take compromise. I made breakfast this morning, he's getting all my favorite snacks from Trader Joe's tonight. To be able to rely and trust your significant other is special, but that doesn't mean it's easy. In fact, it can require bending, changing, accepting, and sometimes even questioning if it's worth it. I mean, let's face it, dating is difficult these days, and relationships can get complicated. And sometimes, you can find yourself in a situation with your partner that shows a different side of both of you. Which is why today's case just hits different. And I think you need to stick around to really hear why. This is the case of Felicia Blakely. Welcome back, Saran.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
I'm happy for you to be here, too.
So, excited to see what this case has to hold. I like the way you transitioned from, like, us to our relationship, and then the case also dealing, I'm assuming it's involving a relationship, so good job on that.
Right or wrong, thank you. Okay, well, we actually, I don't know if you listened to my episode last week, but we are back in Atlanta again. But this time we're on a very different side. We are going back in time to 2002, which is very much your vibe.
I'm trying to think who was like the biggest artist in Atlanta around that time.
Well, this was during the height of the Atlanta club scene. Songs like Oh Boy, Still Fly, Gossip Folks, and Lose Yourself were big. You think of any songs? I know you think of bigger songs.
Yeah, and I'm thinking more like the Atlanta songs. Like, was T.I. big? I don't know.
Yeah, like, I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Second grade, you know.
Also, I feel like back then, songs that were out just lasted longer. I mean, like, virtually there was not really any social media. It was much easier for songs to stay on the charts for a while, which in hindsight may be why they were considered classics. Yeah. Okay, I know this isn't that kind of podcast, so I'll move on.
I mean, back then I was like a lot of 50 Cent, so I don't know. Maybe Southern didn't really have a scene.
Maybe.
In the music that I can remember.
Well, no, I feel like they did. Because the reason being is the nightlife in Atlanta was, at this time, at the height of it. Like, it was the destination point for partying. Celebrities would often flock to Atlanta. Actually, it's pretty similar to now. Atlanta's just known as a place to be if you want to have a good time. I was there for a bachelorette party about a year ago, and they had hookah at brunch. Hookah.
At brunch? That's insane.
I realized then that I could not live there because I would have no money. But it also is what I theorize the career path for club promoters to be born. And our story starts with Carlita Knox, also known as Smokey, but I think I'm going to call her Carlita for the rest of my coverage. She was 30 at the time and still very engaged with the club scene. On August 15th, she was getting ready to meet up with her brother, Ray. Ray had spent the day grilling and cooking and essentially pre-gaming for a night out. He invited his sister and her friends to come by. And, you know, just like basically vibe out. Carlita continued getting ready, you know, putting her makeup on, probably changing a bunch of times so she found the perfect fit, getting her hair done. I think they had like the bang bang back then.
I was just about to ask you, what do you think they were wearing?
It was definitely a heavy bang. And like...
And Ray had on, what, like a big white tee?
Yeah, that's what the boys were wearing. What were the girls wearing? A nice little halter piece.
I don't even know.
A little lace. What were those things I used to wear in middle school? You probably don't remember. A lace... It was like a tank top, but it was like lace on a tank. Wow. Or something like that. But she knew that they would be there by the time she arrived, so she wasn't really rushing. Besides, at that time and now, you don't hit the club till like midnight. Which is why when Ray's friend G calls her, she was confused. He said that he was planning to head over to Ray's house when he decided to call in advance. He went on to say that he heard heavy breathing on the phone and gunshots, and apparently two female voices saying, "Get the money, get the money."
Oh, probably somebody got set up somewhere, I'm thinking.
Well, of course Carlita had questions like, okay, when did he answer the phone? What females? Gunshots? Is he hurt? So she immediately hung up and started calling her brother. And ring after ring, there wasn't an answer. Carlita decided to head over to her brother's apartment. She brought her friend Sam with her, and the two sped to the apartment complex. When they arrived, she noticed the front door to Ray's apartment door is cracked open, and like any horror movie, Sam decides to creep inside. The next words that come from Sam send chills down Carlita's spine. "It's not good. It's not good. They're dead." Carlita calls 911 immediately, unsure of what to do. The DeKalb County Police Department come on the scene pretty quickly, where they find two lifeless bodies in the living room, one on the floor and the other on the couch. There is blood everywhere. At the time, Ray had like a white couch that was drenched with blood and light blood splatter that was on the walls. The apartment was nicely decorated, in fact, and decently kept up, but there were signs that something terribly wrong happened. Outside of these murders, the story that led up to them was in that room, and police were determined to figure out who was responsible for this. Carlita, at this time, obviously is distressed and heartbroken. She then tried to figure out who could have done this. She would later go on to say that finding her brother dead changed her life forever. "I cannot imagine the pain of losing a loved one, especially in that manner." I just think it's, like, so fucked up because, like, the bond between your siblings.
Yeah, I don't want to think about that.
Yeah. And especially if you all are, like, forever best friends, that's even more lucky. Carlita losing her brother was heartbreaking, and it was just the beginning of this really cold, confusing case.
I'm kind of confused already. So, Carlita, that's Smokey, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and her brother, Ray. G is Ray's friend?
Yeah.
G called Carlita?
Mm-hmm.
And who's Sam?
So, Sam was with Carlita, like, to go to the house.
Okay.
And she gets a call from G. Like, G was going to come over, too. I guess, like, the pregame, whatever.
Yeah.
And is like, "I called, and I heard all this ruckus." And so Carlita just, she then calls Ray.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not answering. So she just was like, "All right, I'm about to just pull up." Like, I don't.
Do you know what part of Atlanta they're in?
I'm not sure if his apartment, like, if it was released. Like, none of my sources I could find, like, the actual specific address of his apartment.
It was probably confidential or something. Who knows?
So I want to talk to you a little bit about Ray. Raymond Goodwin was born in 1968. He was raised in Birmingham, Alabama, actually. And he was raised by a single mom who had five kids. It wasn't easy, but his mom did the best that she could. He was nicknamed Captain, and he was the middle child, which is like very you vibes. And if you ever heard, have you ever heard of middle child syndrome?
I have, but I'm sure what is it like? No, I don't know what that is.
Okay, so basically they're usually very responsible and reliable.
Sounds like me.
Yeah, right. Okay, it fits. And Ray loved his siblings. He was always looking out for his sisters. He was a part of the band in high school and was a hard worker. He'd gotten a job at McDonald's to make a little bit of extra money on the side. And Ray and Carlita specifically were best friends. They were the closest in age as well. And they basically just did a lot together and for each other. But as the kids grew up into young adults, they started living in the metropolitan area of Atlanta. At this point, Ray's siblings were becoming parents, and Ray was everyone's favorite uncle. You would go over there, and you knew that it was about to be a ball. He had, like, video games, good food, movies. He was such a good time. There was actually a picture of him that I was looking at when I was writing, and he's, like, has this big grin on his face, and he has, like, a Corona with the lime, which is the best way to drink Corona. In one hand, and he has, like, a plate of food in the other, and it just looked like he was so fun. And, you know, he was just, like, someone that you wanted to be around. He was known as the funny one who was outgoing and, honestly, just, like, your normal guy. At the time, he made a career being a car salesman, but at 31, he switched careers to become a photographer. Can you imagine like how cool it is to just go for your passion. And
yeah, you were born 68 and at 31, so it's at 99 you started photography.
Yeah, so this is all like in like the late 99s into the early 2000s. I don't know, his whole thing was just like, if you have a goal, just go for it. And I think especially the way that creative scene has boomed now with photographers, videographers, he was ahead of his time. Ray would set up booths and take photos of families, couples, anyone, and he was really manifesting that photography into entering the entertainment industry. At the time, Carlito was actually already in the industry as a dancer in clubs. The two kind of bonded over this because Carlito would hook Ray up with other dancers to create flyers, and so it kind of ended up expanding his clientele. He was photographing dancers in high-end clubs. He would make their portfolios, and Carlita and Ray basically had each other's back in the like club entertainment industry. Of course, Ray was naturally magnetic, so he ends up having a large network as well as making genuine friends. He becomes cool with a man named Claudel Christmas, which, can that name get any more fire? That's so
Claudel
cool.
Christmas?
Yes, and Claudel went by Doc. Doc also was a really cool guy. He was just suave and really fly. He became best friends with both Ray and Carlita. Doc was known to gamble. He liked hitting the casinos, and he mainly was just known to be a well-known patron in the industry. This kind of makes me think that just the club scene in any city is the same. Like, you get to know the DJs.
Promoters.
Exactly. You see the same people. Like, if you see the same people enough times, you're going to, like, recognize the faces. So, in 2002, Doc was 35 years old, and he was a year older than Ray. He was just in his own career and enjoyed his personal social life. Ray and Doc would go out a lot, and whether for pleasure or work, they always had a good time and ended up meeting someone new. And in 2001, a year before the August 15th murders, Ray actually found love. Alexa, cue love in this club. I can't actually play that for publishing reasons, but you know the vibes. Ray meets Akasha Turner, and present day, she is stunning and beautiful. I watched a documentary that she was in. She has this beautiful brown skin, like these lovely locks. She has crystals in her ears and a nose ring. And she's just such a vibe. And in 2001, it was no wonder that Ray fell hard for her. Ray had become spiritual himself, and that was a big attraction to Akasha. It honestly felt like things had just fallen into place. Ray had his dream job, living in his dream city, met his dream girl, and was fulfilled with his friends and family. And I wish that this was where our story could end.
Yeah.
Moreover, what caused the murders of both Ray Goodwin and Doc Christmas? Because Doc was the other identified person. They were two best friends who were just living the dream. So the day of the murder, there was no immediate signs of struggle. The door wasn't broken in, nor were the windows. And aside from the blood, there wasn't anything that seemed too out of place. I mean, it was like your average 30-something-year-old apartment. Not so much a bachelor pad, but not quite a family man home. And I know millennials know what I'm talking about. Like, around your spot, it had probably has a similar vibes. But what was concerning was just how Ray and Doc were murdered. They were pretty identical. A gunshot to each of them in the head, and then Ray had a couple more shots in the torso.
Wow.
Carlita was the first person interviewed, and she explained that it felt like a robbery, like you were saying. Mm-hmm. Neither Doc nor Ray had any immediate enemies, and that's kind of what I want to focus on, because these weren't guys that were living a life of potential crime, right? There wasn't any sign of, like, drug dealing or scamming. Like, they were making genuine living and then just enjoyed to be out in the club and stuff like that.
Yeah, but I feel like in that, like, party scene, you don't have to necessarily be a drug dealer or celebrity or whatever. Once you're in it, you just get a lot of attention drawn to you.
Yeah, and you're right, because if you think back to 2002, cash was way more popular. Of course, you had credit cards and debit cards, but it wasn't like there was Venmo or Cash App, and most times people were carrying around, like, hard green dollars, especially if you frequented strip clubs.
So the land is known.
Yeah. Plus, like, you had money, you'd, like, tip your bartender, your dancers, promoters, if you get a section, that whole thing. Like, it was just a lot of cash.
You know what club they went to?
There,
like, Magic? No.
I don't know. Like, they had, because sure, clubs changed. Yeah. I don't even think that some of the ones that are big now What are the big clubs in Atlanta right now?
I'm only Blue, Magic.
Blue Diamond?
You went there more recent than me. What happened in Atlanta stays in Atlanta.
Okay. They're, like, I don't think that those are the ones. I don't think that those can't be that old, right? But Ray had a lot of nice equipment because of his photography business, and he was known as a clean-cut guy, so he dressed nice. Like, he kept himself together. Plus, he had become a really popular face in the industry. The question is, was this a planned robbery of both men, or was Doc in the wrong place at the wrong time? Carlita went on to tell police about G calling her and informing her that something was wrong. According to G, he'd actually spoken to Doc, not Ray, before the murders, and it was all by, like, happenstance. So Doc and G were already on the phone when the robbery started to take place.
Oh, so did he hear, like, gunshots and stuff, or...
Yeah.
Oh, he heard it on the phone.
Yeah, he heard the noise, he heard the heavy breathing, and then he heard, get the money, like, get the money.
Oh, yeah, you said that in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I shouldn't even say robbery for sure. I'll say attack for now. So here's the thing. Who do you imagine is waiting out in the night for, like, unbeknownst victims of, like, when, like, people go into the club? Like, who do you think is, like, waiting out for them? If you were to close your eyes and imagine, like, what your typical, like, surprise attack person would be, or surprise robber would be, who would you imagine?
I'm guessing, well, let me not say who I would imagine, but I'm guessing they were targeted because they didn't have any enemies, and I guess that's more of an easy target, because someone who does have enemies, you'll probably obviously look for the enemy.
So a lot of these robberies that were happening were done by women back then.
And nobody set them up? Like, there's no man behind it all?
So, I'm going to get to that. Because
I feel like sometimes there's a man behind it all, and they use a woman to go set them up. Because obviously, oh, let's take a girl back, whatever. And, yeah, because I think that happens in Vegas a lot, too.
But. Yeah. And it's kind of a two-way thing. So, I'm actually about to talk to you and introduce you to another female serial killer.
You have a female serial killer in Atlanta?
In this story.
Oh, wow. I did not see that one coming.
Okay. So Raymond and Doc had been shot collectively about 7 times and bled out. They were dead on the scene, and inside Ray's apartment, detectives found their wallets were missing. It was clear that during the night, Ray and Doc were drinking and having a good time, like I said earlier, waiting for more friends to come over. Police would be able to see glasses and food left out. This probably was the spot you went to before everyone moved as a group to the club.
Mm-hmm.
It also made authorities suspect that the men knew the perpetrators. The question was, were the murders done by male friends, female friends, friends at all? Whoever did this caught Doc and Ray by surprise. It appeared that Doc was shot execution style, and Ray, once witnessing, seemed to try to flee, but was shot dead as well.
No, that's why he had more gunshots than Ray, right?
Mm-hmm. Police knew that there was a strong chance of Ray and Doc knowing, or at least being comfortable allowing people in their apartment. And honestly, it makes sense if it was a friend or acquaintance. Because, like, I think about the amount of times, like, someone has a get-together and it's like, I don't know everybody that's here personally, but, like, you're a friend of a friend, that kind of thing.
And even back then, technology is not that big. So maybe something was set up, but there's nothing to go back to, like a text message or...
Exactly. So there were 7 bullets fired, and they were .32 caliber bullets coming from a small gun. And normally women carry... women carry smaller guns. And again, the voices that were heard saying, get the money, according to G, were women. Police also found cell phones belonging to both Ray and Doc on the scene. They immediately subpoenaed for those to be checked out. Next, police interviewed friends of Ray and Doc. Ray's girlfriend, Akasha, explained that normally she knew exactly what Ray was up to or who he was with. She recalled that Ray and Doc were hanging out with 2 dancers who went by Peaches and Snow.
Peaches is like the most common dancing name, I swear.
Carlita was able to confirm that she was familiar with Peaches and Snow to an extent. For all those who aren't really aware, a lot of dancers will give made-up names or stage names, 1 for the fantasy and 2 so that they can protect their safety. Carlita remembered Peaches and Snow coming to a yacht party she hosted a couple weeks before, where Ray was taking photos. And Carlita recalled one woman standing, she was about 5'9", and just kind of seemed standoffish. it's like a, I guess like telepathy. Carlita just felt like something was off, or I guess it's intuition.
Yeah, but for sure.
She recalled warning Ray about them and just being like, this just doesn't feel right.
At the yacht party?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I also want to take a moment to say I love the trust between Akasha and Ray, where like they didn't hide anything, because maybe in other circumstances a guy would be nervous to tell his partner like, oh, I'm with two exotic dancers pre-gaming.
Bubbles, what was her name?
Snow. But the couple trusted each other. Akasha also had an alibi for where she was and knew exactly what her boyfriend was doing the night that he was murdered, so she was cleared. Then there's the bond, of course, with Carlita and Ray. Carlita also supported her brother, but was able to say something about these girls who doesn't feel right. So, who were Peaches and Snow? I also saw that Snow went by Pumpkin, but I'm going to say Snow because the source where she goes by Pumpkin has a little bit more of a fictional twist to it, whereas Snow is in some of the research that I found.
Okay.
So, So the police began looking at strip clubs in the area. Rumor had it, Peaches and Snow worked at lesser-known clubs. And remember, this is 2002. There isn't an Instagram or Twitter. You literally, like, police had to just pull up and physically go to these clubs that weren't so keen on having police around. On August 7th, 2002, while police were still trying to locate Peaches and Snow, they are called to the scene of another crime. There was another shooting across town. A third man had been murdered. 29-year-old Lemetrius Michi Twitty was found dead in his living room. He was shot everywhere. So,
do we know if he frequented the clubs or not?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to get to that.
And were the police, maybe I'm jumping ahead, would they go like undercover into the clubs?
Oh, when they were like trying to gather information? No.
Just trying to find Peaches and Snow.
No, they didn't go undercover. They were just going, yeah. But he was shot in the head, back, abdomen. It looks like all the shots were also close range.
Maybe he was trying to really get away. I don't know.
But the shots were close range, so I feel like it was like, I'm almost like...
Oh, I hate you?
I mean, yeah. Police started feeling like a pattern was brewing. No force entry, .32 caliber casings, and this murder was close to the murders of Ray and Doc. So we're at three murders now. Now, Michi's friend, Marchetti Towson, happened to be at the scene of the crime, like literally outside of the door when police...
Marchetti?
Mm-hmm.
I like these names.
I like the name too. When police arrived, police were eager to talk to him. And that day, Marchetti explained that Michi didn't show up to work. In fact, I feel like it was more of like a wellness check, just at the wrong time. Like, he shows up as the police are there to discovering. And it wasn't like Michi to ghost. He was a barber and he had a lot of clients waiting on him. He was like a pretty big name, I guess, in like the barber game.
Yeah, I don't want to think about going to my barber and he's not there.
Oh my god!
That happened once in my life. But he had a health scare, so he had to go to the hospital. But yeah, I was like, what am I gonna do?
Well, after a few conversations, it was clear that Michi, Ray, and Doc had more in common. So all three were black men in their 30s, really likable people. Michi was influential in the barber game, like I said. He had a lot of clients. He had a close circle of friends. He was in pretty high demand. Like, I feel like if it were now, he'd probably have, like, a few thousand followers on Instagram. Yeah. Like, people would know him.
Charging $100 for a cut.
Exactly. And he always had money on him because he was paid in cash, yet there was no cash found in his apartment. Also, his gold Nissan Maxima was missing from the scene.
Took the car, too?
Yeah. Police felt like they had a lead. At this time, Michi's death was spreading word. And here's the thing. Ray and Doc and Michi kind of knew each other. They all were familiar with each other because of the Atlanta scene. Friends and family were becoming rattled because this wasn't like... didn't seem like gang-related or drug-related. It felt like these people were being targeted. And no one knew who the next victim would be. So DeKalb County detectives had two suspects now. Peaches and Snow. Which doesn't really sound helpful at all, because who were Peaches and Snow?
I don't know their real names.
And what made it worse was that people weren't willing to talk. I mean, trusting the police wasn't necessarily like the thing to do back then, especially for a lot of people of color in these populated areas, which meant that the families of Ray, Doc, and Michi were at a standstill. But that wasn't going to work for Carlita. Her brothers and friends had been murdered, and she wasn't just going to allow that to happen and just let this go by. So she decided to do something about it and do some digging on her own. She was able to look at the permit books of the dancers in different strip clubs. Basically, she was able, like, they trusted her enough to let her come in and look at the books because she was a fellow dancer. She was popular in the scene. So they were like, okay, you can look.
So wait, what are these permit books?
Yeah. So it's like, basically, they are the books of, like, the real identities of, like, dancers. So, you know, like, your license information.
The police didn't have pictures of anybody either.
Right. The police didn't have anything because they would have had to come in with, like, a warrant. And they didn't have warrants. And the owners of, like, these smaller clubs would let Carlita, like, look at the books.
I wonder if, like, Ray took pictures, I guess, at the party, and maybe had pictures of them. I don't know.
That's a good point, too. I wonder, but then I almost feel like Carlita would have had to, like, I mean, he probably has had at least 100 models at that point. She'd have to find them, find all of those, his digital
imagine
copies.
What you gotta do to get pictures. Yeah, not like on a
right. It's not like, exactly. So, like I said, permit books are like your HR for the club.
Gotcha.
And it had like your name, age, where you live, and the name you'd even probably go by. And of course, Carlita was able to identify Peaches at one of the clubs. Nice. Her real name was Felicia Blakely. Her height.
I couldn't do this. I'm just confused.
Well, because I mean, how could they get a permit for the books?
Like a warrant?
I mean, sorry, yeah, a warrant.
I mean, I feel like if you have a murder scene that you're investigating, and you feel like.
Yeah, but let's say there's like 50 clubs in Atlanta. You'd have to get a permit for each club. And you'd have to have enough for a permit. Oh, like this murder happened here. A dancer might know something at your club. And I gotta do that 50 times. I feel like.
Well, I don't know. I feel like they could have done a better job finding out who Peaches. I mean, I guess he said people didn't want to talk, right?
Yeah, but I mean, definitely, they could have done a better job. Obviously, like the fact that the sister had to go in, she should be mourning, and she can't do that.
But also, in this like no snitching and all that, so everybody's like, nah, I'm not talking to police, probably. So.
Exactly. So Felicia's height, weight, and look stood out as the same girl that Carlita had even remembered at the yacht party. We now have a lead. Felicia Blakely was born in 1983. She was from Jacksonville, Florida, and growing up, she was in a single family household. She bounced between her mom and grandma. In 1998, she moved to Atlanta with her mother. Felicia and her mother's relationship was tense, and at this point, Felicia was 15 and kind of growing into her own. Her mother was working long or odd hours in a warehouse, which meant Felicia had a lot of premature freedom. Felicia was able to get a fake ID and began dancing underage. 2 years later, at 17, she left home. At this point, she was making a lot of money in the clubs. She was exotic dancing, and she was kind of getting used to being on her own, but she'd been exposed to a lot.
I can imagine.
I mean, yeah, that's literally what I was saying. I stripping at 15, 16 years old, being in that environment so young. And if an exotic club is your thing, that's fine. But as an underage girl in there, that's not okay at all. And Felicia was beautiful.
The money was coming in, probably.
Mm-hmm, yeah, she had like this beautiful dark brown skin. She was slender and tall, and she had these large eyes and a nice smile. And she got a lot of attention from men. In fact, it was a couple years into her being in the dancing industry that she got pregnant. Felicia decided, though, that she wanted nothing to do with her child's father and that she was more than capable of raising her child on her own. Now, while pregnant, Felicia was still trying to dance. This is not the age of Krishan Rock, where being in the club pregnant in some alternative universe is normal. Felicia exotic dancing underage pregnant with a belly being visible was affecting her income. And the result of that was Felicia realizing that the money was about to be tight, at least until she could have her baby and get back to being on stage. One night, though, as she's dancing, she notices a man in the crowd who, despite her growing belly, is intrigued by her. The man gave her a wad of cash. He introduced himself as Mike Berry. Mike was charismatic and, to some, considered handsome. He was tallish, with strong features and a slender build. He took a liking to Felicia, who had in those last few years spent a lot of her time alone. Mike and Felicia started dating from literally that day.
Wow.
He promised to take care of her and the baby, buying her gifts, showering her with clothes, money, cars, anything she wanted, you name it, he provided it. However, it didn't take long for things to turn dark. Mike was noticeably older than Felicia. And his promises of getting them out of Atlanta and having a family started to become hollow. Felicia at this point didn't really have a concrete life. Her actual whereabouts of living wasn't clear. By the time Felicia had the baby, she basically would drop the baby off at daycare and then come pick the baby up. And then even that started to slip. Mm-hmm. So eventually she lost custody of her son and Felicia's mom had full custody.
So her mom, the relationship with her mom is still...
It seemed at that time it was still kind of strained, but, you know, her grandma stepped up.
Yep.
And Felicia went back to focusing on dancing full-time. At this point, though, because Felicia is so transient, she would go from club to club, and the only thing that was clear was that she went by Peaches and was involved with a guy named Mike. For a couple weeks, the case had gone quiet. Carlito had gotten the police their biggest lead, but where did the police go from here? It was on August 25th, 2002, that there was finally a big break. Because a call had came in about a report of two suspicious individuals outside of a Miss Winner's restaurant. Have you ever heard of that?
Miss Winner's?
Yeah. No. So Miss Winner's is a small chain of like chicken and biscuit quick serve hotspot.
Do you know if it's still around?
Yeah, it's still around. They have about 19 locations in Atlanta.
Oh.
They kind of remind me of Biscuitville. Bus. Very, very.
Biscuitville was good.
Yeah. Very much so, Bus.
Or like a Bojangles.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, if anyone's listening from Atlanta, can you please tell me if Miss Winners is good? I'm genuinely curious.
So does this lead have anything to do with the Gold Maxima?
Yeah. One thing I did find back in 2002, at least, there was a series of robberies. People were coming to Miss Winners and robbing Miss Winners.
What?
Mm-hmm. Now, here's the thing. The robberies were apparently done by women. So when the call came in, police immediately went to Miss Winners to see the suspects at large. So to set the scene, the manager from Miss Winners calls the police and informs them that there's some suspicious individuals. Mm-hmm. I said two before, but there's conflicting. I've also seen sources that say three women. And apparently when the police arrive, all women run into the bathroom.
Definitely multiple women.
Yeah. All women run into the bathroom. Police order the women out of the bathroom and one by one they follow. On their way to the squad car, they hand over the keys to the vehicle they pulled up in.
Mm.
A gold Maxima. Nissan Maxima.
Not smart, but...
Police ran the plates and the car, of course, came back to Michi. Police continue to search the scene. And you're never going to guess what they find.
And the Miss Winners?
Yeah.
What they find in Miss Winners? They find the gun?
Mm-hmm. Where?
Maybe in its toilet.
Oh my gosh. Okay. You want this job? Yeah, they find it in the tank of the toilet.
And Peaches is one of the girls?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So...
Oh, in the tank, like on the top part.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I was just thinking in the toilet bowl, but yeah.
Now the women were eventually arrested and processed. And there were two women that were specifically arrested. I don't know if that third woman even exists.
And the other one was Snow?
Yep. They arrested Amisha Irving and Felicia Blakely. Peaches and Snow. Or Snow and Peaches.
Okay. Were they both like serial killers? Or?
I'm going to get to that. Police were intrigued to find Felicia there after all this time, especially considering they had picked her up for a completely different reason. Detectives start talking with Felicia, and the first thing that they notice is that she has a necklace that wasn't exactly a necklace. It was a chain with a padlock on it around her neck. Before they can even ask her about it, she basically comes out confessing to all three murders. She knew police had the gun and the car, so there was really no way out of it. Felicia was apparently really candid. She laid it all out there. She didn't seem too emotional. She explained that she met Ray through Snow, who is Amisha. Mm-hmm. She said that she planned on going to Ray's just to party. She'd become familiar with him through the nightlife. And now, at this point, Felicia is only like 18 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. And Amisha is 20. Ray and Doc were respectively 34 and 35 years old. The age difference is uncanny, and though Ray was a nice guy and in a committed relationship, you can't help but feel just a little bit uncomfortable by the age gap. But nevertheless, that day in particular, unbeknownst to Ray and Doc, Felicia told them that she was there to have a good time. But in the back of her mind, she was there to rob Ray, Doc, and whoever was there, really. Felicia recalls that night, she says she was pretty desperate and she confessed that she had the gun illegally. Now, here's where things get tricky, because she tells police she was only there to steal money, but the first thing she does after a while of partying is she pulls the gun out of her purse and she immediately shoots Doc while he's on the phone. Ray tries to leave and she immediately turns to him and shoots him. She was aware that he withdrew about $1,000 that day, and so she and Amisha decided to take that money and any other cash they could find. So Ray's life cost $1,000. Yeah. Felicia and Amisha immediately hit the club after. They went to Buckhead, Atlanta, so you were asking before, and partied the night away. It was that night that they met Michi while partying.
Wow.
Again, Felicia believed that he had money, and they found their next victim. So literally, right after the double homicide, it seems that they meet Michi, and Amisha and Felicia go back to his house. That is when they gain his trust a bit more. They party a bit more with Michi, and then eventually he dozes off, and then he gets up and he's kind of groggy, and they shoot him, and then they steal $650.
So since she's pretty open about all this, did she said there's only three people she murdered? Or were there more that
we know of so far?
Have there been any cases similar?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a song, I think I brought this up to you when I was writing this, Lil Wayne made about this type of robbery, having women partake in stealing by gaining the trust of men to come over for the night and then it turning into a bloodbath.
What kind of Lamar?
Yeah, yeah. It's called Mona Lisa, so check it out. It'll give you full body chills. Felicia explains that the money came and went so quickly, so they decided to start robbing Miss Winner's spots as well. So those string of robberies were done by her and Amisha. I'm sure there were other robberies done by other people too, but like at least for a few of them that were hit, it was she and Amisha. Police were pretty taken aback by how matter-of-fact Felicia was. I mean, she kind of came off like, not like she didn't care, but she was kind of straight to the point.
At that point, you're just YOLO, and then I don't think she cared much. And, you know, when they start questioning you, you have this, like, kind of nonchalant
way. I might as well. Like, I'm already here. I can't get out of it.
I know what I signed up for.
Right. The police believe that these were come-ups, that she found men she could take advantage of, and there was somewhat of a high off of it because she went to the club, like, literally that night afterwards. Police turned to Amisha, who pretty much corroborated everything Felicia said. But Amisha says that she wasn't privy to the murders. Like, she knew that they were going to go steal, but when Felicia was killing people, she was just as scared. And by the time that she was in too deep at that point. She literally describes that, like, when she hears the gunshot, she too drops to the ground. That's what she says. That's what she claims.
She's just trying to get a lighter sense.
I was going to say, so it's like, I mean, I don't know, because it's like, You knew you were going
to
break the law, but
you didn't do much.
Right. Like, you knew there had to be a weapon if you're going to steal from these guys. Like, you knew there had, because you just going there with no weapon, being like, give me your money, they're going to be like, no. So, I don't know. Was she lying? Did she know all along?
Felicia did probably spearhead everything, and she probably was the, what do you call it? The one that planned all of this.
Oh, Felicia.
The main person, yeah.
Okay.
And then Amisha was probably just like following orders and just.
Well, police believe that both confessions were enough for charging both women with malice murder, armed robbery, felony murder, and theft by taking. As news of Felicia's arrest hits the media, it doesn't take long for Orlando Police Department to reach out regarding Felicia Blakely. 4 months before their arrests, on April 17, 2002, an Orlando man invited a young woman to his hotel room for a private night of partying. He was shot in the head and robbed.
Was from Florida, yeah.
He was able to survive and stayed anonymous. The description of her fit Felicia's down to the padlock necklace.
Was it a 32 caliber? Oh, do you not know?
I think it was.
He survived a headshot?
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the necklace for a minute. At this point, police felt like it was impossible, that it was...
Yeah, I meant that as well, the significance of behind the necklace, the padlock.
Yeah, at this point, police felt like it was possible that Felicia was maybe guilty of more than 3 murders and 1 attempt. It was after her arrest during her second interview where Felicia makes a new revelation. Her boyfriend, Mike Berry, was actually her pimp. She was forced to commit these crimes due to Mike. He was making her commit these crimes and return the money to him. Like, are you kidding?
So, is there anybody else under Mike that they found?
Mainly Amisha and Felicia. Though, I will have more about Mike that kind of leads so you can kind of put together what he had going on. Mike Berry had also been the one to give Felicia the necklace. It was his sign that she was his property. According to Felicia, Mike was the one to pick the victims and forced Amisha to join in as well. Felicia explained that she was actually scared and that Mike continued to call her to force her to murder Ray and Doc that night. And that she actually called him and had him on speaker while she committed the murder and robberies.
That's insane.
Mike then made her continue to kill and then transition to restaurant robberies. So who was Mike? Let me give you a bit more insight. Mike Berry was actually known as Michael Dino Berry. Dino was his nickname or street name. He is the father to about 14 children and has 10 different baby mothers. He was no stranger to a life of crime. In fact, he had been known for drug dealing and other crimes related to robbery. He was about 14 years older than Felicia when the two met. And when the murders occurred, she was about 18, right? So she had to be about 16 or 17 when they started dealing with each other.
And so, she was pregnant too, right?
Yeah. So she's underage, which is like just like the tip of the iceberg of this monster. When Felicia admitted to the manipulation and abuse of Michael Berry, I at least thought, okay, this guy's going to go to jail. And if you're anything like me, you probably jump ahead and look at photos of those involved. So you would see Michael's mugshot is on the internet. But when police interviewed Mike, he admitted to nothing. And Amisha did not corroborate anything that Felicia said about Mike. In fact, it was mainly Felicia who was clear about her role in the murders. So Mike basically got off scot-free.
Did they even talk to like Mike's, one of 10 of Mike's baby mothers? I don't know.
No.
See what Mike's like, no?
Mm-mm. All they had, and I think like it's interesting because all they had was Felicia saying Mike is behind this. So I feel like even if they Felicia were to go to his baby mother's like, you know, the DA were at this point of looking at the death penalty for Felicia. And Felicia, in turn, worked with her attorneys on a plea deal where they would avoid trial and Felicia would serve life in prison. I'm listening to this case right now, and it's about this young 12-year-old girl who's murdered by 4 other teen girls, and she's, like, tortured. It's so horrible. The main ringleader's name is Melinda Lovelace, and the victim's name is Shonda Scherer. And these 4 girls who torture and kill her, they're 16, 17, whatever, when it happens. They're also tried as adult. They get 60 years, and they only end up doing, like, 20 years.
Where is state? In Georgia?
No, it was in, like, some Midwest state.
When was Felicia born? What year was it? Do you remember?
Yeah, Felicia was born in 1983.
83, okay.
Yeah, so she's about to be 40.
Well, you're very well still alive, yeah.
Yeah, but I just think it's crazy that clearly she has gone through a lot. And, I mean, it's horrible that she killed 3 people. Like, I'm not taking that away.
Yeah,
but but it's just, like, and when you just think about, like, our system and how, like, those girls did... I mean, if I were to break that case down for you, like, you would cry. Like, it was just fucking horrible things to this 12-year-old. And they're out of prison, living their life right now. And Felicia was about to face the death penalty.
Wait, what does she end up getting? How many years?
She gets life in prison, yeah.
Without parole, a possibility of parole?
Yeah, no, it's over. She's supposed to be in there for the rest of her life. Amisha also pleads guilty and receives concurrent sentences with the possibility of parole. So okay. Amisha gets possibility, Felicia does not. The Florida case was never pursued, but Felicia would be in jail forever. And I know this kind of seems like it's over, but this case ended up getting a lot of traction. In fact, a movie was created off of Felicia's life called When Love Kills. It gives a depiction of the abusive relationship between Mike and Felicia. Lil Mama plays Felicia.
No, I just can't. I can't remember. Cause Lil Mama, I remember like she did like a free concert, a free show in Brooklyn at the park. It was just funny. But
yeah. Okay.
I can't imagine Lil Mama playing that role.
Yeah, she played, and then who's the other? Who Wait, is
did
the
you
other
watch
guy?
It? Oh, are you going to
and
watch
Lance
it?
Gross plays Mike. I actually didn't watch it. Do you want to watch it after this?
What network is it on?
I don't know, because it kind of gave me like Tubi vibes.
Yeah.
But I thought it was really cool because it actually like shed light on this case, specifically her relationship with Mike, which was really abusive.
But does it show Mike as a pimp? Because that's also only her version, right?
Well, we have to see. But from all accounts, he is a pimp. And he ends up admitting like his lifestyle. Okay. So I'll talk a little bit more about that. The movie gave Felicia more space to tell her story. So Felicia was actually sexually abused as a child. She also allegedly found out she was HIV positive and believed it was contracted from Michael. I only saw that in one specific source, which is why I'm saying alleged. Finally, the meetup with Michi was due to more of a sexual promise. Felicia had gotten into sex work. And so it wasn't just the promise of partying, but it was also the promise of sex at some point. And it isn't clear, because there was no trial, if this was ever brought up. Also, because there was no trial, there wasn't any time to further push Michael's involvement. So according to Nappy Thoughts of Aisha Adams Media, Michael was interviewed after the movie. At the time, he was incarcerated, and he would be for quite a few years. As of 2023, he is still incarcerated. He, at the time of his interview, had seemed to be turning somewhat of a new leaf, becoming more religious. He said, quote, "Our past is made to build character and turn us into the people God created us to be. A lot of people in here and out there know me as a vicious person. So when they see the change and what I'm trying to accomplish, they listen. I'm still learning to be patient and humble, as well as not violent in certain situations. But life is a learning process, and I still have some beautiful people by my side." He also claimed that he planned on writing a book about his experience and was pretty open about his relationship with women. In terms of Felicia, he claimed that he still loved her and distanced himself from any allegations, but approved of she and Amisha, quote, "sticking to street code."
So much for turn over a new leaf.
Right. So Michael was arrested in Atlanta by an undercover cop in 2004. He had invited the cop to his motel room, or two officers, I should say, who were stationed at the Savannah Suites on Pine Street looking for a drug deal to bust. Mm-hmm. According to an incident report, inside, the officer spotted 5 hits of suspected crack on the counter next to the TV. A hotel security guard showed up and bought 3 hits from Mike in front of the cops.
Wow.
Yeah, and the officers then invited Mike to party in their room, where Mike and his 2 roommates showed up. All 3 were arrested. And then in Mike's room, police found cocaine in the coffee maker and dresser, as well as marijuana in the nightstand and in the fridge. That literally was the snowfall effect that would be like his incarceration. Felicia had a theme where she was always pretending to be older. In fact, when she was arrested for the robbery, mm-hmm. and then subsequently the murders, she was 24 when she was only obviously 18 or 19. Her child at the time was still with her mother, but was only about 2 years old. The truth is, this is a story that sounds like a serial killer at first, and maybe even like a badass who went on a killing spree. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, this was a young girl who was introduced to sex, drugs, and a fast lane life at a young age. She had a strained relationship with her mother, lost her child, and was doing what she could to make ends meet. She met a man who promised her the world, but ended up abusing her, pimping her out, and then, according to her, forcing her to murder and rob. She was also relieved to admit the murders. It ultimately kept her away from Michael. So Felicia's done a couple interviews about her life, especially after the movie gained popularity. She explained that Snapped and For My Man covered her story, and the book A Treacherous Hustle by Serenity Hall also covers Felicia's story.
Snapped, you said?
Mm-hmm. I actually use them as one of my sources.
My mom loves that show.
Yeah. Felicia explains in interviews that God just found the perfect timing for her story to be told. She was known as a serial killer, but there's so much more to that. It makes me kind of think of Eileen Wuornos, who I covered, who was known as a monster, but it kind of feels like she was a monster that was created out of being a victim of abuse.
I mean, a lot of these crimes, and I guess the way people turn out, they're just products of their environment.
So yeah. So
there's another case set up.
Felicia explains her relationship with Mike was much more than manipulation. He was physically abusive. He was deranged. And even though he shared like that deep quote about change and all that stuff, he was horrific to her. In fact, in 2006, years after her arrest, Mike had continued to send letters to her, which you can read on Amazon from the book titled From Her Pimp.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Felicia was able to see the movie. She was able to see the movie about the depiction of her life, and she said that it was just heartbreaking to watch because, you know, she just sees like this young girl that was so naive and taken advantage of.
So she said it was accurate?
I think there was a lot that was left out. Like, they didn't even specifically, for a few examples, like the way she's arrested was wrong. They do as best they can to show she and Mike's relationship, but there's so much more to it, basically. Which is why she's able to, like, she really supports the book that was written about her. And being able to use her book that has, like, the actual letters from Mike, which is, like, the closest that she even came to an apology from Mike, which probably was something narcissistic.
Yeah. I feel for the kid, though.
I know. When I first started researching this case, I, like, assumed she was going to be, like, just, like, some sociopath. But the more I learned, the more I realized how wrong I was. And how I kind of have mixed emotions, because on one thing, through like the movie and short docs, they only scratch the surface. Like when we watch like a short documentary, whatever, you only get like a slice of it. Like I had to go and do more research, obviously, for this case. And then even now, like in the hour that we're talking, this is only just a bit. Like there's so much more to the story. Yeah. Felicia has been able to write a couple books of her own outside of the two that I mentioned. She talks about her case and, more importantly, the signs of human trafficking to people across America. She'll do phone interviews, things like that. And if you're still intrigued by this case, I encourage you to do some research on your own. Felicia right now is in her late 30s. Her son is in his 20s and has stayed out of the spotlight. She will literally likely spend the rest of her life in prison. There is a chance that Michael and Amisha will see the light of day outside of prison walls. And as for the victims, Ray was a loving friend, partner, brother, son, cousin, uncle. He had so much light and he lost his life. I don't want that to be lost in either part of, you know, what happened to Felicia. And I genuinely believe that he and Doc invited those girls over as a pretense of just hanging out, because both of them just kind of had that like look out for you friend vibe. Like it just didn't seem like it was something weird and inappropriate. It seemed like it was like, I mean, they did, especially Ray did business with these girls, so it wasn't like, you know, anything of false pretenses, you know. And Michi just seemed like a victim that was picked by someone because he came off to other people as flashy, or he came off to having something that people wanted and it cost him his life. Carlita should be commended for her work in finding her brother's killers inadvertently. It could be considered as stopping more murders from happening.
She's a hero.
Yeah. And there were a lot of relationship dynamics in this story, and though it's ended, this is a story that will probably stay with you for a while. Mm-hmm. I mean, it had such a buzz, especially after the movie came out. Even during the time that it happened, it was all over the news. And that is the case of Felicia Blakely. Thank you so much for joining me this week. Please check out all my sources for today's episode. Thank you, Saran, for joining me. Now I want to do a true crime fact of the episode. I do it at the end of every episode.
Okay.
Usually my facts are all true crime based, but they're a little bit quirky. This one is more so... Oh, this one just fucking sucks. It's so sad. According to DoSomething.org, human trafficking earns global profits of roughly $150 billion a year for traffickers.
What?
Yeah. No, I told you this is 99 billion of which comes from commercial sexual exploitation. Globally, an estimated 71% of enslaved people are women and girls, while men and boys are around 29%.
I wouldn't have never imagined
that. I know. If you know anyone that is in an abusive relationship or finding themselves in a situation that they feel they cannot get out of, please report it to your local police, as well as reaching out to the National Human Trafficking Hotline at 888-373-7888. Say something. to lighten the mood.
But you're going to do your outro to keep walking in the light.
Oh, I am going to do it. Yeah, I am going to do it. Please rate my show. Tell your friends about it. 5 stars would literally make my day. And you can follow me on Instagram at Yvonne Estelle True Crime. I will see you in a couple weeks with another case.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me. And 5 stars only.
Thank you. You are the best co-host ever. All right. Safe journey. Keep walking in the light with love. Until next time, Yvonne Estelle.
Bow.